The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this December 8th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on a overcast and chilly Monday afternoon here in the Auburn Opelika area. Tons to get to on today's show. It's a very reactionary show of On the Line with all sorts of stuff going on across college football this past weekend. Of course, conference championship games are in the books. We have a college football playoff bracket, some basketball things to talk about too, so it should be a lot of fun on this Monday afternoon. Christian, how are you, sir? Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, man. I'm doing great. How are you doing on this Monday afternoon of
fine
Auburn High Tiger basketball?
Not as much Auburn High Tiger basketball as we thought. We were supposed to have the girls and the boys tonight against Russell County, but turns out somehow both girls teams have the flu, so they are both completely wiped out for the night, and so they are going to reschedule that game. So no girls game tonight, but we will have boys basketball tonight against Russell County. That's going to start at 6:30. Was supposed to start at 7. That now begins at 6:30, and then games tomorrow night at Lochapoka. So, you know, just changes everywhere.
Yeah, what about this weekend? How do they play this weekend?
They played last week. They played pretty well on Monday and on Tuesday.
Really?
Boys did. Yeah, they did.
Good for them.
Yeah, they did.
Yep. Had this weekend off?
Yeah, they didn't play this weekend.
I got you. Understand. Yeah.
Auburn men's basketball played this weekend. Is that who you're talking about?
No, they were off as well.
They were off this weekend too. Yeah, you're right.
No, we have a fantastic show. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we talk about our basketball coverage here to wrap up hour number one. But man, we're talking conference champions here. Talking about the game reactions in itself, the SEC championship game, the Big Ten championship game, all of the others, and how chaos presumed in all of them, and the two or three things that the college football playoff didn't want to happen, they all happened. And now the college football playoff committee is having to deal with all of those consequences and all of the frustrations, all of the fan bases that are both happy and quite angry. And there's a couple now opting out of big bowl games because they were not included in the 12-team playoff. Ain't no way that we talked about it here from 2 to 4 Monday through Friday on ESPN 106.7 about how, man, these conference championship games are just not going to be important. And the 12-team playoff is too many teams, and it's not about if you're in, it's about if you're out, and how the playoff, who's in slogan, ruin college football. No way any of that is coming to fruition. We're going to talk about that. Also talk about the college football playoff bracket being revealed. Did they get it right? Some teams that are in, some teams that are out. Two G5 teams. And I'll let Jacob turn off my mic and talk about how great the ACC is, because you had two G5 conferences that are essentially rated higher than the Atlantic Coast Conference, which is why Duke is not in the college football playoff. However, Miami is. And then we'll talk a little bit of Auburn basketball at 2:30, all of that here in hour number one.
Yeah, it was a crazy weekend, man, in college football. And it was on Friday, it was on Saturday, and it was everything that we were hoping it would be, right? Most of the games were pretty good. Couple of them were close. Couple of them were a couple of score games. In terms of true blowouts,
only one, maybe two, I would think, are kind of put in those categories. We both went in our pick'ems, in case you hadn't seen. I gained zero ground last week. We both went 6-3.
Oh.
Had a couple of differences, but we both went 6-3. So we will, in fact, have to take this into the college football playoffs just to make sure that I can come back and win. The difference
I heard you only get 0.5 points. Right?
No, the difference was I had Tulane. You picked North Texas. We both had James Madison. Both had Kennesaw State. We were both wrong on UNLV against Boise State. We split on the Big Ten championship game. I, in fact, did take the Indiana Hoosiers to take down Ohio State. We both picked Georgia. We both picked Texas Tech, I think.
Yes.
Is that right? You did pick Duke to beat Virginia, and then you also picked Western Michigan to beat Miami of Ohio. So we both went 6-3 last week. So not too bad for a conference championship weekend, like I said, that ended up being pretty good. Won't go into detail on Friday's games all that much. Tulane winning got them into the college football playoff, which was a big deal. But do we start with how bad Alabama looked? Do we start with what happened Saturday afternoon? Because I cannot remember a time that Alabama was in the SEC championship game, which this statement goes to show how good they've been over our lifetimes, of course. But I can't remember them looking that bad in an SEC championship game.
No, and yeah, to show how many times that they've made it shows how good they've been for our entire life. You mentioned avoiding the Friday games. I'm sure we'll get to it in a little bit with the playoff selection, but the fact that the American Championship and the Sun Belt Championship were listed as higher conferences than the ACC, and it took us a little bit talking about the new rules with the college football playoff and how everybody assumed that the ACC was in that best five conferences. Crazy that it's not. But yes, Alabama looked outmatched, looked as one-dimensional as you feared they wouldn't, but you fear that they have looked over the back half of the season. When you go to team stats in this game, I think it's the only real thing that you needed to know if you didn't watch this game. It's the fact that Georgia ran for over 140, and Alabama did not rush for positive yards.
-3 yards. That's bad. I'm sorry. That's really bad. I don't care what level you're playing, what game you're playing. Like, give Georgia's defensive front a lot of credit, yes. But, man, this was ugly. I mean, Georgia scored a touchdown in every quarter of the game. Alabama didn't score until late in the fourth quarter. And, yeah, they ran for negative yards. Like, you have to try
and
to
it
do
wasn't,
that.
And it was, yes, Ty Simpson did get sacked 5, if not 6 times, had negative 28 rushing yards, but
you should still be able to overcome that.
You only ran the ball 10 combined times, truly, if you don't count Ty Simpson's 6 carries for -28 yards. Daniel Hill had 11 yards on 4 carries. A.K. Deer had 10 yards on 3 carries. Ryan Williams had 5 yards on 1 carry. Lartzier Brooks carried it once, didn't get a yard, and then you had a team rush down from a kneel at halftime. But other than that, absolutely nothing. And did Ty Simpson do fine through the air? I mean, he threw for 212 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. That's a fine stat line if you run for 150, but Georgia takes that as a win 10 times out of 10. If you only throw the ball for just over 200 yards and you can't net a positive yards, or net a positive number in the yards category on the rushing side of things.
Well, the problem, too, with Ty Simpson, who has just not looked good over the past month or so, he was one of the better quarterbacks in the country after the Florida State game. He was really playing well. He was in the Heisman conversation for quite some time.
Well, we talked about it. He had like 26 total touchdowns and 1 turnover.
Yeah, I mean, he was playing extremely well. And I have people telling me that they don't think he's healthy. They don't think he's 100%. They think something's wrong with Ty Simpson. And I would be willing to believe that. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, he had more incompletions on Saturday than he did completions. He was 19 of 39. That's 19 completions and 20 incompletions. Alabama's offense sucked on Saturday. And Georgia's defense has been playing very well. Very well. And they did on Saturday, too. They didn't play that well, okay? And their offense is fine. Stockton went, you know, 20 of 26, 156 yards, had 3 really good-looking touchdowns. Nate Frazier ran the ball well for Georgia. They did what they had to do. It is important to note for Alabama, before we move on to some of the other games, Jam Miller did not play in this game, who is their best running back. Don't know if that was more of a precautionary thing or if they really didn't feel he was good enough to go in the SEC title game and were confident that they were going to make the college football playoff. If that was the case, it worked. But Alabama just looked really, really bad, and their fans are not happy about it. They have no confidence going into the college football playoff, which we'll talk about coming up in just a few minutes. But how about the ACC? The doomsday scenario that everybody talked about on Thursday, Friday, and heading into Saturday, what the ACC could not have happen was Duke to win the ACC championship game. And the 7-5 Blue Devils did just that. Why? Because college football. That's why. They beat Virginia in overtime 27-20. After having a lead in the fourth quarter, let it slip away. Then they score in overtime to win it by a touchdown. And that was the, not the full nail in the coffin for the ACC, but that's as bad as it could have been. Duke is your ACC champion. They are not in the college football playoff. Virginia is the ACC runner-up. They are not in the college football playoff. Miami squeaks in. We'll talk about that in a moment. That's a bad look for the ACC. Like, I'm sorry. It is.
That's
a bad look.
It's terrible. It represents the ACC in the perfect way that we've described it on this channel and on this show for quite some time. Just about, there's a couple decent teams that the bad teams make look a whole lot better, but when you actually play somebody, doesn't really pan out. Duke controlled this game basically from the opening jump. They go 15 plays, 75 yards, and take up almost 10 minutes on the opening drive. You're then tied at second early in the second quarter. Virginia with a touchdown drive. Duke responds right away with another 13-play, 75-yard drive that takes up 8 minutes. It's absolutely insane to think that your two touchdown drives early in the first quarter and early in the second quarter took up 17 and a half minutes of play clock. Teams then trade punts. You go to halftime, Duke up 14-7. You trade field goals in the third, so it's 17-10 after three. A couple of turnovers by Virginia. Duke kicks another field goal. Virginia kicks a field goal to make it 20-13. Duke punts in basically trying to eat up clock. And Virginia goes 10 plays, 96 yards, and a minute and 22 seconds. Capped off by the 18-yard touchdown with 22 seconds to send it into overtime. And then Duke dominates on the ground once again. Chandler Morris tries to get cute with a little reverse double pass. It gets intercepted on the first play of overtime for Virginia. The Blue Devils win it to move to 8-5.
Gross. The Big 12 championship game was played on Saturday, too, and this was the biggest blowout of the weekend. Poor BYU. Man, they have just stumbled down the stretch of this season, and they have just not looked good. They struggled with Cincinnati. They beat up on UCF after that was close early in that game, and then Texas Tech just had their way with them. And a part of that was Mr. Bear Bachmeyer, who got banged up early in this game, and the fact that he could barely stand. He couldn't even do his two-step, three-step drop as a quarterback, and they still left him in. That doesn't make sense to me. I don't care how good the guy is. If he can't stand up, if he can't backpedal, if he can't plant his foot to throw the football, maybe he shouldn't be in the game. And Texas Tech showed why they're a top four team in the country. They had their way with BYU, knocked out the Cougars of the playoffs, and Texas Tech is your Big Ten or your Big 12 champion, rather, and the four seed in the college football playoff. Don't want to spend too much time on that beatdown because the Big Ten championship game Saturday night. That game was awesome. Indiana and Ohio State. If you like points, you probably didn't like this game, but if you like college football, you loved this game. Indiana pulls off the upset 13-10. They take down the Ohio State Buckeyes. They win a Big Ten title for the first time since 1967. Their first ever Big Ten championship game victory, and they're now the number one seed in the college football playoff. Fernando Mendoza secured the Heisman Trophy, and Indiana just flat out won this game, Christian.
How funny is it, though, excuse me, that the best game of the weekend meant the least in the college football world?
Yeah.
Doesn't that show you how wrong everything is in the college football playoff formats. That 1-2 essentially meant nothing. And not that you should discredit Indiana or use that as the excuse for Ohio State, but you look at it right now and, okay, the two teams flipped.
Yeah, literally.
Well, we're going to shake hands at the center logo and, you know, I hope we win. You hope you win. Let's make sure we keep all the guys healthy. See you again here in a couple weeks. It's kind of the mentality that went with this game. And obviously, again, the fans that won this game for the Indiana Hoosiers should celebrate because you win your first one ever, or your first official one, I guess, since, what, 65 or whatever the case.
Yeah, I mean, this was the biggest win in Indiana football program history.
Just funny enough that when you look at the grand scheme of the college football picture, it means nothing,
yeah.
Which really sucks from the standpoint of college football. Because, man, you got to find a way to make rivalry games good again. You got to find a way to make conference games good again. If there's even going to be conference football games or conference championship games, there might not be, or everybody's going to go be independent, or maybe all the independents are just going to throw their temper tantrums until they get what they want. It's unfortunate, but it was an absolutely incredible game. Yeah, Mendoza goes 15 of 23, throws for 222, a touchdown. Both quarterbacks had early interceptions. And the only thing that would have made this game better is if Ohio State made that 27-yard chip shot and Fernando Mendoza had to go lead a Heisman Ceremony winning touchdown drive. Instead, he just threw it up to Charlie Becker and made a heck of a grab to go and ice
yeah.
the thing.
Yeah, the dude came up big. Surratt had the touchdown for Indiana, and that defensive line sacked Julian Sayin 5 times in the game. You know how many times he had been sacked coming into that game?
It was six, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, the Indiana defensive front had its way. Hoosiers take down the Buckeyes 13-10. They become Big Ten champions. They also are now the number one seed in the college football playoff. The bracket has been revealed. We talk about that coming up next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking college football with Champ Week in the books, and the college football playoff bracket is here. And nobody has any complaints. Nobody has any concerns.
No.
Everything was perfect. Everything was done exactly right. The committee said the right things. They had the right reasonings, and everybody was happy yesterday afternoon, right? That's what I saw on social media. That's what I heard on TV. That's what I heard on radio. I mean, seems like everybody's just singing Kumbaya and having dinner together.
As they should. Everything was a very orderly fashion. Everybody got in that was expecting to get in. Everybody that was expected to miss, missed. And you're just happy to move on with your day and enjoy a drama-less college football playoff.
Yeah, can't wait. Which, of course, is incorrect and how it will never be. But I do think, weirdly enough, Christian, as much as I have bashed the playoff committee, the playoff system, the entire idea of what we're doing right now, for the most part, I do think they got it right. For the most part, okay? I know there are people who are extremely upset with several things. A, I know people that are upset that Ohio State only went to 2 instead of 3, and that Georgia didn't jump them after winning the SEC championship game. I'm indifferent. I would have been totally fine with either one, Ohio State being 2 or Ohio State being 3. The Buckeyes are ranked 2nd. I know people who are upset that Alabama did not move up or down after losing the SEC championship game, which answers a question that we'll talk about throughout today's show. I know people that are upset about Ole Miss not dropping at all, actually going up after losing their head coach, even though that was a new talking point and a new consideration rule put in for this season. I know people that are upset that Texas A&M is ranked 7th and not higher after having one loss on the season and it coming in the final game of the year.
Yeah, the 12th game of the year on the road.
I know people that are upset that Miami got in. I know people that are upset that Notre Dame didn't get in, which seems to be the biggest conversation right now. And also know people that are upset that 2 G5 teams got into this college football playoff. We have some a few minutes here, Christian. Which one of those concerns you the most? Because that's what I've heard, is all of those, and then some.
First, before talking about concerns, I would like to read from collegefootballplayoff.com. The College Football Playoff Selection Committee ranks the top 25 teams at the end of the regular season. The five highest-ranked conference champions and the next seven highest-ranked teams will be seeded into a 12-team bracket based off the final rankings, with the four highest-ranked teams, not conference champions, just ranked teams, receiving a first-round bye. But that first sentence, the five highest-ranked conference champions are essentially guaranteed in. The College Football Playoff ruled that the American was higher ranked than the ACC as a whole, which is why Tulane is the 11 seed, and then James Madison is the group of five champion. They ruled that Tulane's conference and Tulane's resume was better than any resume in the ACC, including Duke, who was the ACC champion, or Virginia, who was the ACC runner-up. And I get it. But man, wasn't the complaint last year in the first round of, man, these games aren't fun to watch. Man, these games don't really have a chance. These teams are just happy to be here. And granted, they should be. But you're looking at the early lines right now, and James Madison has to go to Oregon, where they're more than a three touchdown dog in Eugene.
Yep.
You then look at Tulane, who's going to Ole Miss, and even without Lane Kiffin, they're almost 3-point underdogs in this game. The rest of them you feel like are going to be fine. They are 3-score underdogs, yes. 17.5, the Rebels are favored by. And that's where a little bit of frustration comes in, because you feel like the criteria just changes every single year. Is it the 12 best teams, or is it the 12 teams that we feel like we have to rank because of chaos, or is it the 12 teams that have the best logo by their name, and that's what we're going to continue to look at? You feel like it's all of the above, but you feel like there's absolutely no clarity whatsoever when you're looking at this thing as a whole. 1, 2, 3, and 4, absolutely zero complaints. If you want to have one, it's the fact that Georgia didn't jump Ohio State after losing, but that wasn't going to happen anyway. If Ohio State won, then maybe there's a conversation.
Yeah.
Because little Indiana, but 1, 2, 3, and 4, even 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, I'm sure. Fine 1 through 5. I think everything is fine.
Perfectly fine with that. Do I think that Ole Miss should have stayed 6 and A&M at 7? No, because I think that A&M's resume looks a little bit bigger, including keeping Notre Dame out of the College Football Playoff. But Tulane at 6, Texas A&M at 7, Oklahoma and Alabama at 8. The fact that Alabama did not drop at all, I don't know if they really could have, just because of the three teams that are now behind them, which I think gives a little bit of grace to the playoff committee. How great is that game going to be, rather than all of the dramatics? Oh, the fact that Oklahoma went into Tuscaloosa and beat the Crimson Tide. Oklahoma now gets a playoff game in Norman, where Alabama's still a 1-point favorite as of right now. There's so many little things that you feel like you can nitpick, but the one just generic for me, if I'm going to complain, is the fact that nobody really knows what you have to do anymore to get into the College Football Playoff. Unless it's just simply not playing anybody and having a zero next to your name.
Which has been my concern for months now, which is why I was talking about going into conference championship week. Man, teams like Ohio State was fine, but a team like Indiana deserved to have it in writing. If we lose, what happens? If you win, yeah, you were going to take the number one spot. Alabama found out if they lose, it doesn't matter. They didn't move, but you're right. I mean, so many of these teams, you just simply don't know. And it goes back to us talking about the NFL model, right, which we don't have time to get into right now. But you're leaving it up to a committee of people that clearly don't watch all the games. They get together once a month and clink glasses together and decide what would be the most fun, right? And they're getting railed harder right now than I've ever seen them. And there's a lot of people like us that agree with a lot of what they did. It's just the stuff near the bottom that is concerning and Notre Dame fans are fired up, and Miami's pounding their chest. Vanderbilt fans are fired up, and now you got teams like Notre Dame declining their bowl games. And I mean, it's just, I don't know. Of all the things, and we'll talk more about it as the show goes on, but two G5 teams should not be in the college football playoff. I'm sorry. And I was of the belief that one guaranteed is not fair, is not right, because they're stealing a bid from somebody. Let's have an honest question here. Should James Madison or Notre Dame be in the college football playoff? It should be Notre Dame, right?
You could even throw in there, should Tulane or Texas or Tulane or BYU.
Or Vanderbilt. There's a lot of teams out there that would have a much better chance and much better resumes than those two teams who probably deserve to be in. But because of the rules and the brackets and the guidelines that we've put in has caused this to be incorrect.
Who was it on the playoff selection show that basically gave their two cents about, we still are in belief that the G5 ranks need to go make their own college football playoff rankings, essentially, and go play those 12 teams. However, and understandably so from the standpoint of competition, but you now are willingly just throwing your program to Eugene to go get bludgeoned.
Yeah.
Just from the simple conversation of, we're in, because that's what the college football playoff says, doesn't it? Hashtag who's in. And by God, we can't be left out.
No, and it has broken the system of college football. There are so many more topics and so many more conversations to have, and we will over the next several days and probably several weeks. But we do want to take a break, and when we come back, we'll flip to the hardwood for a little bit and talk about Auburn basketball, who didn't have a whole lot of fun out west. We talk about the Auburn Tigers and what they could do to bounce back. More football news as we go. All that here in hour number one.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us here on a chilly day in the Auburn-Opelika area. But phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390. Or you can hit us up in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And we get to the phone lines to start the segment as Jay held through on the break. What's going on, man? You're on the line.
Hey, what's happening? Great show.
Appreciate it.
Just wanted to say this about this whole college playoff mess.
Okay.
Number one, James Madison and Tulane should not be in the playoff. Should not. In fact, here's the reason why. James Madison and Tulane are not group of four. They're not power four conference schools. They're group of five.
Right.
And if you look at the body of work of group of five versus power four, let's look at it for what it's worth. Not knocking the group of five. I went to a group of five school. I went to Troy. I graduated from Troy with my MBA. The thing about it is, let's be real, they don't have the same budget. They don't have the same fan base amount. It's different. They don't even play against the same quality caliber of competitive athletes.
Right.
And here again, I'm not knocking the Troys of the world, the Georgia Southerns of the world. I'm not. I think they play a very good brand of football. I think it's something that can be grown over time. But let's be real. On a week-to-week basis, do they play the same caliber of schools within that conference?
No, and it's not even close, Jay. Not even close, which is why you see them in these situations, which I think you're about to get to, is they get blown out in situations like this more times than not.
They do. And my thing is, you have what I would call outliers or aberrations. You have outliers where beating LSU or Troy beats Nebraska, but let's look at the the LSU and the Nebraska at the time in which Detroit beat them. They weren't at their best.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't. Florida was down when Georgia Southern beat them some years ago when Will Muschamp was head coach of Florida.
Right.
Now, if it was the Florida of Urban Meyer or of the old ball coach, Georgia Southern would have been got their doors blown off. Let's just be real. What I think needs to happen, the Group of Five needs to have their own playoff system and their own national champion.
So combine the – kind of like we were talking about in the last segment, combine the American, combine the Sun Belt, combine Conference USA, and almost do the same type of whatever format, however many teams you want to have, but then go play your own national championship and be crowned the G5 national championship. Is that the route that you would choose to go?
Yes, I would.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen a lot of people talking about that. And
from
also...
you playing in that standpoint as well, I mean, that has a little bit more weight than – one of us sitting there asking for that as well.
Well, I've seen people also, too, Jay, talk about a G5 playoff that may or may not feed into the big playoff, right? Some people would be for that, right? The G5 champion would then earn their way into a big playoff bid. That's a lot of football. I don't think that would happen. But most people are in your boat, though. Yeah.
It's too much football. I think there just needs to be a G5 national champion.
Sure.
Then they have something to go to in terms of broadcasting rights, in terms of TV revenue and things like that, as opposed to you're trying to play James Madison going all the way to Oregon. They're going to get smashed. Let's just be real. They're going to get smashed. They're going to get the hell beat out of them.
Yeah, and their fans can't make that type of trip in a large number, Jay, right? I mean, they can't make that trip to Eugene.
No, I really do think the folks who are picking these teams in the for the college playoff, I really do think they smoke too much dope, in my opinion. I really do think they smoke dope. They don't think with a damn. Number one, Alabama 3 loss should not be in the playoff. I'm sorry, Alabama fans. I know y'all out there. Go Bama, roll tide. I know. I hear you. 18 national championships, but y'all lost 3 games, period, the end. And you should not be in the playoffs when you got other teams who are Power 4 conference teams who only lost 2 games sitting out. BYU, ND, and maybe Vandy. Maybe Vandy, because Vandy lost to Texas A&M and Bama.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, BYU, ND. And I tell ND fans, join the Big Ten. Join the Big Ten Conference if you're crying. Join the Big Ten Conference. If you have to join the conference, join the Big Ten. That's all I got to say, gentlemen. Excellent show.
Appreciate it, Jay. Great points there talking about the college football playoff, 334-321-1390. Folks can get their thoughts here with us by calling that number, or you can shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067, which someone did asking – who has Notre Dame beat? Jeremy asked this question. He says, who has Notre Dame beat that you don't think Tulane or James Madison could beat? USC or Pitt? JMU or Tulane could absolutely beat them. Talking about Notre Dame's playoff resume or just their overall record and their strength of record and things like that. Look, I understand, and this is what Jay was getting to, and I think this question from Jeremy is in reference to me saying that G5 teams don't belong in the playoff. I understand where you're coming from, I do, but there's a reason that James Madison is a 3-touchdown favorite going to Oregon. Neutral site?
Underdog.
Yeah, that's what I meant, sorry, underdog. The professionals in Las Vegas are already saying it's going to be a 3-touchdown game. Now, you can't base it off of that. You still got to play the game. I totally get it. But to Jay's point, which I think is fascinating here, people talk about, well, G5 teams have upset the big dogs before. Yeah, in 2007 when Michigan sucked, right, and they let Appalachian State walk into the big house and beat them. That was Michigan as a not good football team. App State played great, and they got the win, and you can never take that from them. But to Jay's point, which I think is really good, is these are the best P4 teams in the country. These are the best teams in college football at their best.
And what happened to the one last year who got a first-round bye in Boise State and Ashton Jeanty? You play Penn State in the Fiesta Bowl and get your doors blown off.
By a team in Penn State that was good, not great. Right? And so I understand, but and look, here's my thing too. The whole Notre Dame situation, and we'll get to Auburn basketball in a moment. The whole Notre Dame situation is its own beast. It's got its own issues. It's got its own problems, in my opinion, right? I said all year after Notre Dame started 0-2 that I believed they would still make the playoffs. I said Notre Dame would win out and that they would make the playoff because I said ain't no way the playoff committee would leave out that Notre Dame team. They wouldn't leave out the logo. They wouldn't leave out the brand. They wouldn't leave out the name. They wouldn't leave out the money. Props to the College Football Playoff Committee for doing so. You proved in this instance with Notre Dame, the playoff committee proved me wrong this year. Doesn't mean they won't do it next year. Doesn't mean they won't do it throughout history, right? But Notre Dame, right, the rest of their resume is good. Not great, okay? Yeah, they beat USC at home. That's a top 20 win. They beat Pitt on the road. You can argue with it, but it's a top 25 win. I don't believe that James Madison or Tulane could beat USC or Pitt on any given day. Could they pull it off out of 10 tries once or twice, maybe, against Pitt, who is not a top 25 team in my eyes? I'm not arguing for Notre Dame to be in this current format, because I agree they need to be in a conference, and they got punished this year for not doing so, which is good, right? The committee set a standard, set a precedent for them, and their two games that they played out of conference against top 25 teams, they got beat against Miami and Texas A&M. I'm saying, though, for national championship purposes and quality football purposes, what do you think the spread would be if Notre Dame was traveling to Eugene next weekend? 10 points? 7 points?
If that, 4.5, field goal?
What do you think would happen if Notre Dame was traveling to go and take on Ole Miss in Oxford?
It'd probably be a favorite.
Probably be a pretty good game, wouldn't it? But instead, we've got two G5 teams who have played nobody but themselves and are going to get into the college football playoff and probably get knocked around.
You could even throw it on the flip side of things and just sticking with this point. What does Notre Dame's football schedule look like if they play Weber State, Louisville, Liberty, Georgia Southern, Georgia State, Louisiana, Old Dominion, Texas State, Marshall, App State, Wazoo, Coastal, and Troy? More importantly, what's the points differential all season long?
But that's to Jay's point. You're talking two different quality football teams.
Correct. Going to but then also responding to the text of when you're looking at two different things as a whole, I think the easiest answer, yeah, if you did play that G5 championship and then you had a play-in game or whatever the case may be, because yes, when you're sitting there looking at the whatever conference you want to look at. When you're looking at Tulane, North Texas, Navy, South Florida, all those teams are great. Yes, and did South Florida go into the swamp and beat Florida? Yes. But I think that's more of the one-off situation. And again, just doubles down the point of nobody really knows what you have to do anymore.
No, and somebody just brought this point up too in our text box. Again, it's open 334-784-1067, asking if, and we have not, asking about, have we talked about the most egregious error yet that we get two rematches in the first round of the college football playoff? I've seen a lot of people have passionate takes on this. I don't love it. I think there are ways to avoid it, personally. Right? Alabama-Oklahoma is a rematch where Oklahoma went to Tuscaloosa and beat the Crimson Tide 24-21. And then Ole Miss and Tulane is a rematch from early in the season when Ole Miss just dog-walked Tulane. What was it, 41-10 or something like that? I mean, yeah. It was a 25-30-point blowout for Ole Miss. Now, that was with Lane Kiffin on the sidelines. We understand that. But if you can avoid it, I think it should be avoided, especially since this is not built on a formula with numbers and mathematics, right? Where in the NFL playoffs, yeah, if you get a regular season rematch in the NFC Championship game, okay, that was by math. That was by a formula, right? And they won their way there. And it's fantastic. And I think Alabama-Oklahoma will be a good game, but do we really want to watch Ole Miss and Tulane again? Do we really want to see that? And then, if Ole Miss is to win that game, we have another rematch of Georgia and Ole Miss, which could be awesome, or it could not. But I would rather see Ole Miss take a trip to Bloomington and take on Indiana than play Ole Miss or take on Georgia again.
Yeah, see Alabama go to Miami, or see Alabama come.
Dude,
wherever.
Put Alabama at the 10 spot with Miami just for fun here. They take on Texas A&M. Winner of that goes to, they wouldn't go to Columbus, but they take on Ohio State.
Yeah.
Like, just things like that could be avoided, but I'm not overly passionate or feel one way or the other. I don't like it, but I'm not, that's not the hill I'm going to plant my flag and die on.
And even more so, again, I'm with you on this standpoint, but putting conference games in the first rounds.
Yeah.
I feel like that's where Sankey would have any sort of complaint of, well, thanks for allowing all of these teams to get in, but you're essentially eliminating one of them now by way of playing 60-minute football games because Alabama and Oklahoma both can't advance, so you're automatically taking one of the SEC champions or one of the SEC at-large bids away from the quarterfinals.
At that point, though, if I'm the committee, just to push back on that, I would say that's a good problem to have, Southeastern Conference. Be happier here type of thing. You know what I mean? Rather than them saying, okay, well, we're gonna protect you guys and we're going to make sure. I'm not huge on that idea.
It just makes it to where you hear all about playing other teams and playing different conferences, playing different games to avoid that sort of argument.
Yeah.
It's, okay, the best game on December 19th while the other three are on December 20th. Are basically Alabama. It's Alabama's 10th conference game.
Yeah.
Not even their 9th, which Kirby Smart talked a lot about in the postgame presser after playing Alabama, saying, look at what these two teams look like. They are a shell of what they looked like early on in the season because we beat up on each other every single game, every single Saturday, because the competition is so much. He said he's concerned about a 9-team or 9-game SEC schedule just because of the physicality and what every single game is going to demand. You now get rewarded by playing in the college football playoff. Here you go, Crimson Tide. Here's number 10.
It's almost like there's a way to eliminate one of those conference games.
No, the conference championship is still really important, Jacob.
Oh,
that's what we've preached on here, that it's not going anywhere. It's still uber important, and nobody has hopped on the same train that we've been on for what feels like a year and a half.
I mean, it's just it this weekend proved it, the idea that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And somebody said, yeah, all they had to do was have Texas A&M at 5, which easily could have happened. I think that's a hair high, but A&M at 5 and flip Bama and Miami, which would make sense. So, yeah, I mean.
And then it gets rid of the argument, too. If you don't play your conference games, yes, Texas Tech beat BYU twice. Those are BYU's only two losses. This hasn't really been too much of an argument, but why are they getting punished for being left out? Because they played a conference championship game. BYU and Texas Tech don't play in the Big 12 championship. BYU is in over James Madison. And that right there solves half the problems.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't help that they got, you know, smacked.
But no, it doesn't. And I'm sure that played a little bit of a factor into it. But talking about the two conference champions essentially getting byes into for the first three major conferences of the SEC, the Big Ten, and the Big 12, the ACC obviously was what it was. But that's only 6 teams, you can still pick 6 more. Instead of having 5, you can pick your 6 teams and then have your 6 at-large bids. And you basically rewarded the conference champions, the co-champions, or if one team is 11-1 and one is 10-2, congrats, that team won the regular season in the SEC or whatever the case may be, but you now get rewarded with a bye week.
Yeah, well, look at Miami. Miami just pulled an Alabama from a couple of years ago, except Alabama didn't play in the SEC championship game. They were another SEC team that got in. Miami did not play in their conference championship game, avoided it altogether, and was the only team from their conference that got in.
The
Think
ACC
about how
champion,
broken that is.
The ACC champion nor runner-up got in, but because the ACC was so bad that the Sun Belt and the American were listed, the two G5 conferences with Tulane and James Madison were listed as above. I guess Tulane would have been the I'm guessing they listed the Sun Belt as higher than the ACC, and then James Madison was the G5 team. But however you want to look at it, that's the way that you can. Miami just won an at-large bid for not playing a game.
Which is the formula, if you ask me. That's the way to go, if you ask me. So,
if you're Oregon, why would you want to play in the Big Ten? No, we'll wait. We'll be that fifth seed. We'll get a home game.
Yeah, we'll host the first round of the playoff. It's the extra
game. Where Dante Moore is going to play 2.5 quarters.
Yeah, the extra game, rather than playing the Big Ten championship game, yes, you're playing an extra playoff game, but you didn't play in Indianapolis, so it all balances out. You and Ohio State and you and Indiana are going to play the exact same amount of games.
And you don't have to play Ohio State again. At least not later.
Yeah, Oregon's in a great spot. Oregon's in a fantastic spot. But yet, I don't know. It's just the whole system's broken, dude. It's so broken. We got to get to break. We're running out of time. We'll be right back. We'll wrap up hour number one of the Monday edition of On the Line after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. We've got about a minute or so, and that's probably all we need in terms of talking about Auburn basketball and what happened on Saturday night against the Arizona Wildcats. It didn't start pretty, Christian, and it definitely didn't end pretty for Stephen Pearl and the Auburn University Tigers. Very quick takeaways from what happened out there Saturday night.
It's unfortunate when you have back-to-back years of seeing now firsthand what you did to people last year versus what teams are doing to you now this year.
Yeah, it's not as fun on the other side.
No, it's really not. Auburn loses 97-68, and we had our concerns with their physicality down low. You look at points in the paint, Arizona had 60, Auburn had 24. That halfway explains itself. The shooting of Auburn, it was pretty poor. The shot making, obviously very poor. 7 assists on 21 made field goals, comparable to 23 assists on 41 made baskets. For the Wildcats, there's a big jump this year, at least early on in college basketball, of the teams that are good versus the teams that are great. I think that's the biggest comparison, is the teams that went and they funded their teams more than just about anybody else, you're seeing it on the floor more than I think you have in any year prior.
Yeah, Auburn drops one spot in the AP poll today. They are 21st in the country. They'll have Chattanooga coming up this Saturday in Atlanta, and then Purdue, the sixth-ranked team in the country, next Saturday up in Indianapolis. More on that as we go. We'll talk Auburn football as Alex Golish met with the media just a little bit earlier today. We'll talk about what he had to say, plus some big names in the transfer portal. All that coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy
Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this Monday afternoon. And if you missed any of the first hour of today's show, you'll be able to go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. We try to take the audio and put it on our station website for you every single day in our podcast center. You'll find that on our station website at ESPNAU.com, or you'll find it on Spotify and things like that as well. As again, we try to post that for you every single day. So if you ever miss a segment, an hour, a show, a week, whatever the case may be, you can go back and check that out from today's show. We talked about the conference championship games. A lot of reactions from those, plus the college football playoff and how we're trying to fix college football, but I just don't think it's ever going to happen. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, you could check it out again in the podcast center on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we're talking all things Auburn football, at least to start the second hour. Head coach Alex Golish met with the media today. Some of the quotes, some of the statements that he made with the media, and also talking about some big names in the transfer portal, planning on entering the transfer portal for the Auburn Tigers. We'll also talk about Auburn's decision to decline a bowl game and how nobody really is wanting to go play Georgia Southern in the Birmingham Bowl. There's now been four or five teams that have already declined their invitation. We'll talk about that before we get with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, as we do every single Monday at 3:30. Get his thoughts just about the football postseason, about kind of the calendar as a whole, maybe some Auburn basketball as well, talking about holiday hoopsgiving as Auburn heads to their favorite place to play in the entire country, maybe even more than Neville Arena, and that is State Farm Arena in downtown Atlanta. All of that coming up here in hour number two. If you would like to be a part of the conversation, the phone lines are open up until right around 3:30 before we get Hillman on the phone lines. You can join in at 334-321-1390. And as always, the text box always open as well at 334-784-1067.
Well, we had a chance, you said it, to meet with Alex Golish today, Auburn's new head football coach. And folks, he spoke for a long time, like a long, long time. But it was good. It was good information. Good questions for the most part. Good answers, good insight, good intel, at least for what he was willing to give for now. Folks, he's been on the job for a week. 7 days. That's it. That's how long he's been here. And he talked about, in his opening statement and a lot of the questions, he talked about what they've been doing over the past 7 days. And he talked about trying to meet with every player that's on this team. He noted that it's difficult because a lot of them are not even here. With finals and the holidays and things like that. He said so many of them were not here or are not here, right? So he said their priority was to meet with everybody on this team and figure out what they had, who they were, why they're here, and if they wanted to be here, and then if this staff wanted them around, right? He talked about that being the first order of business. Problem is, they had to put a pin in that after a day or so because of early signing day. And I thought it was fascinating the way he answered the question, Christian, about if he was pleased with the signing class.
Yeah.
He went into pretty good depth on that, not the class itself, but just his mindset behind that. Then said they've continued to meet, finalizing the staff and trying to figure out what kind of to do next. And so your overall thoughts and takeaways from what Alex Golish said in his 50-minute presser this morning.
Yeah, I mean, you continue to be more and more impressed based off of the way that he handles himself, based off of the way that he talks with so much confidence about him, about his staff, and not an arrogance in any sort of way, but just understanding the way the business is run and how he gets emotional about some things, but then also keeps it very business about others. There were questions about the staff members that he brought with him, meaning that all of the Auburn staff members that were here last year are not going to obviously be retained, and how does he go about that? I thought he answered that really well. The question that you're talking about was quote-unquote winning signing day, and he basically went into details talking about how he thinks that winning signing day means that you're chasing stars or you're chasing numbers, and he says you more so win signing day based off of what everything looks like in the fall. And I think that's a fantastic answer based off of seeing what the guys do that are freshmen versus the transfer guys, how many of those guys are ready now, how many of those guys are going to be more developmental pieces that you'll use in a year or two. There's so many different ways that you can go about it, but I love the mindset of you go and you get the guys that you need to get that are going to help build and establish the culture that is here and that he's going to continue to raise and tweak just a little bit. And he said that he was very surprised walking out about some of the guys that he was able to get. Looking at the class as a whole, there were a couple of names that he said he talked to that were too deep in other schools and basically were already committed and all but signed. But he said he was overall very pleased with the names that he got while also maintaining and establishing very quick relationships, and said that obviously guys like DJ Durkin being retained did a very, very big job on that side of things because he was able to kind of take a step back and allow the recruitment process to be finalized with the guys that, again, you understand these defensive guys are going to play for Coach DJ Durkin, taking a step back, letting him do what he needs to do to get those guys to sign their name under the Auburn logo.
And I think that's as good as you can ask for, right? I mean, he talked about not only, yeah, in the fall, but years to come. You said that, and I love that, right? It's like, okay, yeah, we got this four-star defensive lineman, but doesn't mean he's going to pan out. Doesn't mean he's going to be good here. And I liked him, too, saying, yeah, we got to develop them. We're a part of that, basically, is what he was saying. And so I liked that in terms of the recruiting stuff. He went into little detail about what their portal ideology was going to be, because he admitted he was like, we're going to use it to fill the gaps, but we don't really know what those gaps are.
Yeah, said that obviously year one and year two look different than the overall plan as a whole, because it was the same conversation that we had with Coach Hugh Freeze of he's going to have to use the portal more in year one and year two to allow him to stack recruiting classes. Now, again, we've given our appreciation for what the class and what the roster looks like right now because of the previous head coach and because of the reason of why Alex Golish accepted the job. He said that when he was having his meetings with teams, and we'll get to more of those quotes in a minute based off of what the players talked about with the team at Auburn as a whole, but said that those guys did not choose him as the head coach, yet he chose them because of the opportunity and hoping that he can get these guys to stay because he sees the talent and he sees what is on the field. And I think that is a fantastic answer, a fantastic way of thinking about it. And it continues to be really, really impressive just the way that Alex Golish has already gone about his business, again, with the signing day jumps in rankings and hearing about the hopeful retention when talking about the staff upbringing and how he hopes to continue to have that number be finalized more and more as you work your way towards Christmas and into January when that portal opens, because, again, things are so different in the world of college football. He's going to have to use that portal a little bit more in year one and year two to continue to fill the holes, put the band-aids on, as I like to say on the show.
Right.
Of, yeah, you need this spot to be fixed momentarily because you don't have the guys on your team right now. And I was fortunate to ask him about the just the transfer portal calendar, right? You don't have that spring window anymore. And so it's a little bit more pressure. He joked and said that, no, Auburn's not a pressure job whatsoever. And but talked about how there's so many ways that you go about it, yet there is a little bit more pressure because you don't have that fail-safe in the spring. So how do you have to go about that? But step one is retention, knowing the places, knowing the roster spots that you need to fill, rather than doing what he said is his main priority since stepping on campus, is to keep as many guys on the roster that A, want to be here, and B, are going to help the team in the future.
I also liked his response to a question about, because he mentioned early on that he was having one-on-one conversations with all the players, and there was a question to him today about, what have those conversations been like? What's been the general vibe of those? What's kind of been the feeling? And that went into a question that I was going to ask, which was outside of just what you've been up to the last week or so, what have you learned and seen about this place, about Auburn, about, you know, why this may have been the right place for you? He basically answered it when talking about his conversations with guys, because he asked all of them different questions, but he said there was one constant question. He said, I asked them, hey, do you like it here? Do you like being at Auburn? Do you like the town? Do you like the campus? Do you like the school? Do you like the people? Do you like being at Auburn? And he said every single player, whatever that truly means, if that was all of them, but he said every player had the same answer. Yeah, I love it here. It wasn't a, I like it. It wasn't a, yeah, it's cool. It's like, eh, it's, you know, it's whatever. He said every player said, yeah, I love it here. And I think that's really cool. And he went into, you know, all the facilities, and he said, I haven't been outside of this building very much, and the only reason I am is to go back to the hotel that I'm sleeping in, which gives you an idea of what his life is like right now. The fact that he's staying in a hotel somewhere in Auburn, Opelika, and driving, getting chauffeured back and forth from the football
he's
facility.
He's staying. I don't know the other words. Sleeping. I doubt he's doing a lot
no,
of that
especially
right
since
now.
He said some of those meetings are going till 1 in the morning with guys.
Which, again, shows me as a former collegiate athlete that it's so cool having a coach bought into you. Right, that it's not, I'm going to schedule interviews from 3 to 3.15, from 3.30 to 3.30, or from 3.15 to 3.30, from 3.30 to 3.45, and from 3.45 to 4, and you're just shuffling guys in, shuffling guys out,
yeah, I mean,
asking them two questions. You're sitting down and you're talking with guys. He said some conversations are half an hour, some
right.
conversations are an hour,
yeah.
And some start at 8, and we go eat dinner. Or you're sitting there and it's 1 o'clock in the morning and we're still in the exact same spot having conversations, and I'm learning about your family, you're learning about my family. That's so cool for me because it shows the coach is truly bought in to his main goal, which is retaining the guys that want to be an Auburn Tiger in 2026.
Yeah, so that was cool to hear him say. And then for the most part, everything else was fairly generic, which you expected for, again, a guy that just got here. But overall, I thought he gave good insights, right? I liked what he said about the quarterbacks, which we're going to talk about coming up in the next segment. We'll talk about some more portal additions and Auburn declining the bowl game and things like that. That's coming up next. And the phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show. 334-784-1067. But said that the quarterback room, and he said this in his opening presser too, and I made sure to highlight this, and he doubled down today, which I love. He said that he wants to have the most talent in the room possible in the quarterback spot, which sounds elementary, which sounds vanilla, right? You say, well, yeah, wouldn't you want that? Isn't that what you want? That's not how everywhere operates nowadays.
It's not how Auburn worked.
No. Most places have one good quarterback because, A, that's all you can afford, and, B, if you start bringing in more competition, you scare people off, which says more about the generation we're playing in than anything else, but it's just a fact.
And, 3, sometimes you realize that the quarterback is good enough and you build the talent around him.
But that's not what, at least from Golish's words, that's not what is going to happen here. He said, I'm going to go get my number 1, my number 2, and my number 3. And we want all of them to be able to step in at any time and win football games for us. And he said, look, there's a lot of talent that we have here. There's some guys that we, if we need to go get them, we can. But we are going to build a competitive quarterback room. And that is promising. Now, whether it happens, who knows? We've heard that before. But it is nice to hear that he at least has a plan offensively. He also went into pretty good detail talking about DJ Durkin defensively. Remember, we talked about no news was scary for me the first 48 hours. Turns out there was never any doubt. There was never any doubt that DJ Durkin was not going to be the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, that was the second or third question that was asked, and he basically started off by saying, well, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but I'm going to tell you anyways. If I could have gone anywhere, I would have wanted a guy like DJ Durkin as my defensive coordinator, and so the fact that I took the job where DJ Durkin was already the defensive coordinator made it pretty much a no-brainer.
Yeah, which is cool to hear. And
relieving, too.
Huh?
Relieving.
Oh, yeah, relieving for sure. Yeah, and the idea that he referenced their relationship again and coaching against DJ Durkin as an offensive coordinator, so I think that's really cool.
It's a really cool concept to think about because Golish was – again, the OC worked in the OC department at Iowa State and then became the OC at Tennessee. And so the idea that these guys have crossed paths multiple times and you go and you obviously study the best of the best. And Golish said that Durkin's game plan was obviously out there. And when he would go and study games as the OC, he'd go and try and find the little ticks or find tendencies or find the things that pissed off a coach as a defensive coordinator so that way he could hit that nerve 1, 2, 3 times just enough to score one more point. And so you now have two great minds on their individual side of the ball working basically in that same meeting room.
Yeah, so I think overall Golish had good things to say. Did not, again, go into detail on certain things just because they didn't know or it was things they were actively working on. But there are other pieces of news for Auburn. In terms of the transfer portal that we do know are confirmed to plan on enter the transfer portal. Got to make sure we use our legal language here, right?
Thank you. Yes.
And we know a couple of those names, and a couple of them hurt. We'll talk about that, plus what Auburn can do to replace them, and the idea that the Tigers aren't going bowling? We'll talk about that right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking Auburn football and some news and some updates about the Tigers and the football team and what it will and will not look like this time, or I guess August of next year. But we have some news that's been reported over the past couple of days, and a reminder that the transfer portal is not open, okay? The transfer portal, as we sit here on this December 8th of 2025, it is not open. It will be come January, but it's not right now. And so anything or anybody or anyone that you see that is entering the portal, they are simply planning on entering the portal. And yes, you do have to use the language that way because, again, the portal's not actually open just yet.
And they haven't talked with anybody either.
Yeah. They have not broken the rules.
No.
Not at all. Couple of the big names for Auburn, right? We talked about some of the early ones. Antonio Coleman, guys like that last week.
The first three started on defense with Strader, Antonio Coleman, and Caleb Wheatland.
Then the offensive guys got involved.
Yeah.
And the first one is the quarterback. It was reported a couple of days ago. The Jackson Arnold plans on entering the transfer portal. And there were some mixed feelings on this, I think. I saw a mixed reaction on social media, to which I say, why say anything negative about him? Why celebrate? Why crack a beer if the guy transferred out? A, who cares? Like, why are you so invested?
If you're on that negative side of
it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying who cares if you transfer. I'm saying, like, why are you so invested emotionally in one particular player and person that you don't even know who he is that you're celebrating and running the streets naked because he is transferring out? Like,
after 1 year, too.
That's a little, I mean, get your priorities in straight is what I would say. There's bigger issues going on in the world. But I did see a lot of support for Jackson, and I think that's good. I think that's good. That should be the response, in my opinion.
I agree.
Because the guy transferred in from Oklahoma, from a tough situation there, thinking he was walking into a promising situation here, and clearly that was not the case. He was dealt a bad hand. He was given an apple that was rotten on the inside and pretty on the outside, and he didn't know it until he got here.
Yeah, and then you got here and was thrown to the wolves and blamed.
Yeah.
And now the head coach is fired and goes on podcasts essentially saying, if things worked out the way that I would have wanted, I'd still be coaching. But instead, not blaming Jackson, but things didn't go how we wanted, and that's the reason that I'm sitting here today.
So you hate it for Arnold. You hope that, at least me anyway, I guess I can't speak for everybody, but I hope he goes and finds a place that is good for him. Do I think Jackson Arnold, after watching him in his young and very roller coaster-y college career, do I think that he's a Heisman-winning quarterback? No, I don't. But I think he's better than the 4 wins that he provided Auburn this year. Just being honest, yeah. I think he's better than a 4-win quarterback in the SEC. I think he can make somebody very happy. Somebody that has a decent offensive line, somebody that has a decent running game, somebody that has a receiver or two, and somebody that has a competent mind calling football plays.
And it gives him the freedom to go play his style of football.
Yeah, I think
so. Which is not a shot at him, but he is not the quarterback that wants to take a 3-step drop and plant his feet in the ground and sit there.
And throw it 40 times a game.
No.
That's just not him. And so, best of luck to him. I have no ill will towards him. Again, I'm not that invested in it. And if you are, you got serious problems. But I hope he goes and finds somewhere and is successful. That is not one that if they go somewhere else, like a Bo Nix, and you see them be successful, it's like, oh, dang, man. Wow, what could have been? What could have been at Auburn? We really let him walk away. For me personally, if Jackson Arnold goes and successful somewhere and wins 8, 9, 10 games for another school, I'll say good for you, brother. I'll say good for you. The Bo Nix one hurt. I have to admit that.
And again, I think that's where that difference is. That's where that emotional connection after 1 year. I don't think that if Jackson Arnold goes to Baylor or Houston or somewhere like that, a little closer to home, and lights it up, Auburn's going to try and claim him.
Right, exactly.
But it's more of the good for you, man.
Yeah,
I'm glad that things
worked
out, because we saw how bad things were at Oklahoma, and you, after a year, saw how bad things were at Auburn. And it's really, really unfortunate, because I know the family not well, but I've met them multiple times and have talked with Jackson multiple times about how excited he was for the opportunity to come to Auburn. And again, it really is an unfortunate situation that, man, it feels like back-to-back years he walked into situations that didn't really give him chances to succeed.
And this isn't fair to say to him, but it's just Auburn, and I've said it since I've been on the radio and even before then, it's another quarterback that came to Auburn that just didn't work out.
Yeah.
It's where quarterbacks have come to die for over a decade, and I hate that, but it is what it is. So for Jackson Arnold, if he goes and is successful somewhere, Auburn fans, for the most part, there will still be the haters, but for the most part, I think Auburn fans will be happy about that. The other guy who entered or plans to enter the transfer portal, not if, but when this guy goes and is great somewhere, this one's going to hurt.
Yeah, this one will sting a little bit more.
Perry Thompson plans to enter the transfer portal. Hayes Fawcett reported a couple of days ago from On3. That one hurts. And look, we watch Perry in practice and in games, and we talk to coaches about Perry in practice and in games, and he's still raw, and he still has a long way to go. The physical attributes are there. Unfortunately, he just never got better when he was here. And you can blame him, you can blame Auburn, you can blame everybody, that's fine. But that dude's going to go find a home, and if he finds somebody that can coach him right and develop him right and get him the football, better watch out, man. Perry Thompson's going to be a good one somewhere else.
Caught 22 passes for 280 yards in his 2 seasons with the Tigers. So it stings. It's understandable. But there's posts going around of Perry Thompson to Lane Kiffin at LSU, and that is when it would really hurt.
Yeah, we'll talk more about the portal, about Alex Golish and Auburn Athletics with Jacob Hillman right after this.
We're halfway through hour number 2. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins, and only the second best Jacob is what I am, because we've got the best Jacob that I know. And it's the Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, who's with us every Monday at 3:30 on the phone lines. My man, happy Monday. We appreciate you hopping on and hope everything's going well.
It's going well. You're too kind, Jacob. That's you're speaking too highly of me right there.
Yeah, it hurt me to say it, but I got it out. Don't worry. Well, man, we appreciate you hopping on, and there's a ton going on. Obviously, football has come to an end, and we'll get to some of the highlights and things of that on our way out. But I definitely want to hit pretty hard on basketball since we have not had a big chance to do so yet today here on the program. And before we talk the last couple of games in detail, Auburn's 7-3. They're still a top 25 team, ranked 21st in today's AP poll. And in year one, under Stephen Pearl, with a brand new roster and a ton of tough games, how would you evaluate what we've seen so far through the first 10 games for Auburn basketball?
A little bit of a roller coaster, just with the result of two of the losses. Obviously, the Houston game was a close one, but then the two losses to Michigan and Arizona kind of leave a little bit of a bad feeling in your stomach, but I do think you have to look at some context and the fact that they're the number one and number two teams in the country, and there's probably going to be a four or five team separation from those best teams in the country and the rest of everybody else. But focusing a little bit more on the positive, I mean, this team does have wins over St. John's and NC State, two teams that I feel pretty good about being in the tournament. Oregon's a talented team. They haven't quite put it together yet. I don't know how their season will end up, but overall, you're looking at a team that's continuing to gel together. And while you don't want to be using that term too much in the month of December, again, I don't want to look too much at that Arizona game and the Michigan game and think that's more indicative of how this team is performing versus the St. John's game and the Oregon and the NC State games. I think those are a little bit more indicative, as well as the Houston game in Birmingham earlier in November. I think those are kind of more of how this team is. And I also think that it's just a matchup-dependent game this year with Auburn in college basketball, because it's not the biggest roster in the world. Last year, obviously, you had Jani Broome and Dylan Carwell in that front court, and they could play with anybody, the biggest rosters in the country. This year, you don't have that, and when you get a team as big as Arizona or Michigan, then you're going to struggle against them, and that has shown so far in those two games.
It's a little bit of a weird spot to be in, or a weird perspective, Hillman, just because what you're seeing happen this year to the Auburn team a couple of times is what Auburn did to teams last year, right? And now you're in the weird spot of it being back-to-back years of, man, you've seen the domination, and then you've seen what happens when you go on the road and a team gets rolling and it feels like there's no ability to get really anything rolling. However, Auburn has the chance to do so after no midweek game this week. You now go to what is probably Auburn's favorite gym in the entire country, and you go to State Farm Arena to take on Chattanooga. It's another neutral site game. What do you want to see from Stephen Pearl and his squad throughout this week, trying to get guys healthy again, trying to work on a couple of things as you make your way to Atlanta to take on Chattanooga on the holiday Hoopsgiving?
It's an interesting week, I think, for this team and this roster. Obviously, it's finals week for Auburn University, so they've got to, first of all, focus on their academics and get through this week and pass all their classes. But also, I compare it to, or really contrast it to, the Michigan game and the aftermath of that, where you had a game 24 hours later. You got to flush that result down the drain immediately, and fortunately with a positive result. Whereas this one, you've got 7 days until your next game, and Chattanooga's not a premier opponent or anything like that, or anywhere near what St. John's is. They have a losing record so far. They've lost their most recent game. But it's going to be an opportunity after 7 days of sitting on it, watching the film, learning from what didn't work and the few things that did work, of how to use that to bounce back and keep moving along, because the SEC play is right around the corner, and it's not going to get any easier. Then while the SEC does seem like it's not what it was this past season, it's still nothing to look down on. Obviously, teams like Vanderbilt are really exceeding expectations, and Alabama, Florida, Kentucky didn't look great this past weekend, but I'll bet you that they're up for the challenge when we get to SEC action. So I think you have to look at it from that aspect, that You have three more non-conference games. One is going to be against a top 10 opponent in their home state, and the other two are against mid-major opponents that you hope to handle well, but you're going to have to be locked in and focused regardless.
We're talking to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here on ESPN 106.7. And zooming out just a hair, not sure how much of the SEC you've been able to watch on a whole. You mentioned Kentucky there for a moment, but just the conference as a whole and what you've seen across the Southeastern Conference. I'll give you my thoughts quickly. I don't think this conference early on is as strong as we saw last year, especially top to bottom, but it doesn't take away from what SEC play will be for Auburn. What's your take on what the SEC has done as a whole throughout non-conference play so far?
Yeah, I agree with you 100% because, yes, last year the SEC dominated in non-conference play, and that is why it was able to send the record number of teams to the NCAA tournament, a number that probably won't be matched for quite a while, and it probably won't be matched by the SEC this season. And that's just because it seems like the rest of the country has also stepped up its game, whether it's Iowa State or Purdue or Houston or Michigan or Duke or whoever it is. Arizona, who's number one now after the win over Auburn, those teams are just the elite of the elite. Illinois taking down Tennessee, and just different results like that. That's not going to let the SEC, you know, on paper when you get to the end of the season, look as competitive, as good as it did in 2024 to 25, but I, like you said, I don't think that means this is going to make the SEC slate any easier for any opponent because, like I said, Vanderbilt has taken the next step. Alabama is what it's been over the last few years. Tennessee seems to be as good as it has been, even losing some of those veteran players over the last few years. Arkansas, Kentucky, and Florida are obviously some teams that or had high expectations, haven't quite looked as good as some might think. But again, I credit that to the opponent that those teams have lost to. You know, Florida loses its season opener to Arizona, number one team in the country. Gonzaga absolutely beats down on Kentucky. That's part of it. Arkansas loses a game to a Duke team that's undefeated. That's part of it. So I think the middle of the pack is where it gets real interesting, is how does Ole Miss fare? How does Georgia fare? So on. Missouri is a big team in the SEC. Is that a tough matchup for Auburn? That's kind of what I look more for. I think that top six or seven kind of you feel good about, and I think Auburn is in that group as well. You know, does Texas with Sean Miller as the first-year head coach make a leap? Does first-year head coach Bucky McMillan with Texas A&M surprise some folks in the SEC? We'll have to find out, but I think that's the more interesting conversation is this league as competitive and elite top to bottom as it was in 24 to 25? I'm not so sure. From at the very top, I think it is, but it's top to bottom is what could be a difference this year from last year.
We flip to college football, and we talk a little bit about Auburn since Alex Golish, new head coach, met with the media earlier today, gave a lot of insights and things on what they've been doing over the last week since they got here, and an interesting talking point that he addressed when he was asked about it, and I thought gave some pretty good reasonings, Hillman. The idea that Auburn decided to decline a bowl game invitation, a 5-7 team. They were in the category of being able to go play in a bowl game if they wanted to. They decided against it, and Alex Golish gave a lot of good reasons, saying basically the timing just wasn't right. There was a lot to do in such a short amount of time, and trying to prepare for a bowl game, he said, if you can't prepare to win it, we don't want to prepare and play at all. And I think that was a pretty good way of saying that. What's your thoughts on Auburn declining the bowl game invitation and just focusing on all the new stuff for the new head coach?
Yeah, it is interesting because I do hate that the timing was what it was, because I do feel like if this had occurred a week earlier and, you know, it was Coach Golish arriving on campus and immediately being like, hey, we have this opportunity, I think things are a little bit different and Auburn can turn their attention to that bowl game in a quick turnaround and you have a week to kind of prepare for the preparation of whatever that game is. Whereas now you're just kind of in this right in the middle of, you don't really have a staff right now. And as he mentioned, a lot of the players have focused on finals. They've gone home. You know, many of them probably have online classes. They're able to take those exams online. So yeah, it's going to be tough to kind of get everyone together. Yeah, I would have liked to see this team get 15 practices under its belt so that they could really get a head start on the upcoming year. But I do understand that there are some more important things. And hey, who knows, maybe it is best for a lot of these returning players to kind of flush everything away, get some time off, you know, just get away from everything. And that's not necessarily a negative thing. Instead of having to get back to the grind right after you thought your season was over, maybe it is best that these guys get a little bit of a, not just a physical break, but a mental break from football, where they're able to go home, see their families, enjoy Christmas, and then come back and get right back to it under a new coaching staff, at least specifically on the offensive side. But, you know, Coach Durkin's back, obviously. So just a little bit of new energy, hopefully, surrounding the program when they get back, and hopefully it's re-energized as well.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network with us every Monday at 3:30 here on ESPN 106.7. And it's a busy time, but not as busy, with football officially over and we're getting closer to the holidays. Not as many basketball games throughout the week as we get closer to the Christmas holidays. But tell the people what they need to know with what everything you guys have going on at the Auburn Sports Network.
Yeah, you're not wrong. It's pretty wild. There's not a ton of home events in the month of December, and there's not a home men's basketball game between the NC State game and the Queens game on December 29th. So like 25 days between home games for the men. And for the women, they're going to have 11 days off between games when they go back to Seton Hall this upcoming weekend. But we'll start off again. It's Tiger Talk week, or excuse me, finals week for the student athletes. So there's no events this week until Saturday, but Tiger Talk will still go on Thursday at 6 Central on Wings 94.3 FM. Stephen Pearl will join, as well as Larry Vickers and then Jeff Grava, as the gymnastics season is going to get underway in early January. But the preview meet is next Monday at 7 Central at Neville Arena. So that's going to be a great event to go preview that gymnastics team before they get the season underway against NC State in January. But men's basketball faces off against Chattanooga in Atlanta on Saturday on Wings 94.3 FM with Andy Burcham, Coach Randall Dickey, and Brad Law on the call. And then Auburn women's basketball will head up to the Northeast to face Seton Hall to stop that big break and get back in action. But so much other content going on. The Talking Tigers podcast is a huge one with Alex Golish, with John Cohen, Cody Burns as well, as Andy Burcham sits down with those guys and talks about the new era of Auburn football. So make sure you subscribe to the Talking Tigers podcast wherever you listen to your podcast.
Hillman, we appreciate it as always, my friend. Are you still able to get out and swing the golf club even though it's chilly outside?
You know, I've done my best, but you know what? Some days it's been a little too cold. It's been a little bit too wet just as of late. But as soon as it dries up, then we're gonna get out there and tough it out.
All right, I believe you that you will get on the golf course soon, Jacob. We appreciate you as always, my friend. I always enjoy talking to you and getting updates around Auburn athletics. Enjoy the week, and we'll do it again next Monday.
Absolutely, you too. Thanks for having me on as always. War Eagle.
Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network with us here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it up here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we are out of here. The drive will be coming up. Bill Cameron, Dan Peck, they'll have you for the next couple of hours. And it's been a good show today. We've covered a lot. Talking about the college football playoffs, talking about championship weekend and Auburn football updates, a little of Auburn basketball in there as well. Just got off the phone with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, so if you missed any of that, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com in the podcast center. I had somebody text us just now in the text box asking Jacob Bronowski, special teams coordinator, Mark, the guy from Pitt. I have not seen anything yet. That was one of the positions that Alex Golish didn't answer, I guess. He said he was still getting everything finalized. And
he hinted at it, though.
He did hint at it, but he didn't say any names. Could be. I mean, definitely could be. I've heard the name be thrown around. I have not heard any confirmations on that. But he did say, however, that –
there would be a press release tonight of coaches who were guaranteed and have been already approved. But I think for now, I think that you could bank on him being hired as Auburn's special teams coordinator. I'm getting a text from an unknown, unnamed source that that is going to happen for the special teams coordinator. So Jacob Bronowski from Pitt is expected to be the special teams coordinator. Nothing official yet, but I think that would be a good hire. And if that does come to fruition, man, Auburn needs a good special teams coordinator.
That's
man.
What I was going to say.
Just go get one that can coach special teams properly. And look, it's not just a problem at Auburn. You've talked about this a lot, Christian. We have a special teams issue in football.
Oh,
right
it's
now.
Ridiculous.
It's horrible.
It's terrible.
I mean, just dumb penalties, bad decisions.
Why is a block in the back on a punt ever? Why is that ever a thing?
And 90% of the time, it's on the other side of the field or the ball's already past you.
Or it's happening on the final block as the punt returner catches the football.
Mm-hmm.
If I was a special teams coordinator, I would not. If the punt returner gets blown up, okay, well, that's his fault for not fair. That's his fault for not calling a fair catch. Or you allow him to do a dance and get out of it. But man, an 8-yard return or even a 4-yard return looks a whole lot better than adding 15, tacking it back off from where the punt returner caught the football. That or punts on if a quarterback is supposed to throw it to a receiver and he does that unsuccessfully 2 times in a game and throws it to the wrong team, we give the quarterback hell.
Or just overthrows, underthrows, misses the receiver, right?
You give him hell for that. If a field goal kicker misses 1 field goal in a game, everybody's yelling at the TV, you have 1 job. That's all you're supposed to do. Look at Ohio State. That's a perfect example of that. But for some reason, if a punter punts the ball, and this is not even an Auburn thing, again, just college football, if a punter punts the ball from midfield, why is there so much grace in the fair catch being called at the 18-yard line?
Or putting it through
the end zone. Or putting it through the end zone when 10 yards is still a pretty big ways of, I understand if it bounces at the 8-yard line and the special teams coverage doesn't do what it needs to do to catch it or it does whatever, but I just don't understand why there's so much grace of, oh, that's a net 15-yard punt because you punted it from the 35-yard line and it goes out of bounds. Now they take over at the 20 because of a touchback.
We've talked about, too, like the rule that has always seemed to be standard on a punt return of park your heels at the 10, and if it goes over your head, let it.
Yeah.
Right? How many guys have we seen now, even this past weekend, a championship weekend or on Sundays in the NFL, where – they'll backpedal to the 4-yard line. They'll catch it and they'll look around like, oh,
yeah.
Crap.
Or muff it.
I mean? Yeah, that
or,
too.
Or catch it over their shoulder and all of a sudden you make a guy miss and now your offense starts at the 3-yard line, where if it started at the 3 because the punt checked up, so be it. But you put yourself in such bad positions. Auburn had that 1 kick return against Baylor, which ultimately ended up being the biggest reason why you won the football game. Just about every single time, Auburn doesn't even start at the 25-yard line, which you could do with a fair catch. You start inside the 20 more times than, I mean, just about anything.
Yeah, so Auburn in particular, yes, but just in college football and in football in general, special teams, I think, need a revival. But
nobody talks about it until it's bad, which goes to show you how vital that position as a coach is.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's like your putting game, right? Nobody talks about putting. Nobody practices putting, but then you get on that green and 3-putt, you walk off pretty frustrated, right? It's the same way. You got to have it. It's crucial. It's vital to have that.
Maybe that just explains your golf game.
Oh, it definitely does. Just multiply that by 2, right? So, yeah, we'll see. That seems to be the consensus that Jacob Bronowski, special teams coordinator from Pitt, could be making his way to the Plains. But more on that and a whole lot more tomorrow on the show. We'll talk some more college football, more reactions from the college football playoff, and bowl season and how it could be on its way out. When 10-2 teams decline to play, that's a whole lot different than a 5-7 Auburn team deciding it doesn't want to play because of a new head coach. So more on that tomorrow and a whole lot more. We'll have that 2-4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.